Hello,
Blog
and welcome.
Talk Radio.
Hello there. I jumped the gun a little bit. This is this is Chatting with Sherry, and I am Sherry Rabinowitz. Actually, I'm not Sherry Rabinowitz. You might have picked that one up. I'm actually Stephen L. Sears, and I am going to be the host for this particular interview. So on our line is Sherry Rabinowitz, the former hostess, who is now going to be the interviewee. How you doing, Sherry?
I'm fine. Hi, everybody.
As if we expect them to all say hi back at the same time. And we can
yes, I'm waiting for that quiet hi.
That particular response that you cannot quite get.
Yes.
So this will be kind of interesting. I have not done interviews in a long time. I've done panels, actually. I was actually in radio at one time, doing a lot of DJ work mostly, but a few interviews. So this will be kind of fun for me as well.
Cool.
So, but we are not here to talk about me. We are here to talk about you, and more importantly, about the fact that you are a writer. Maybe a lot of people don't actually know that about you because they've heard your interviews and they think, oh, she's a blogger and she does her interviews and she's got some interesting people she talks to. But you have a life, you have a career, and that's what I want to talk about. So let's talk about you and writing. And I specifically say it that way. I don't want to necessarily talk about only your writing, but I want to talk about you and writing, because that's not
okay.
just something you do. It's not just a verb. It is something you live.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes,
define writer.
Define writer.
Define writer, as it applies to you and as it applies in general.
Well, for myself, it's a passionate need to get my thoughts on paper or on the screen. I've been writing since I was a child, so when I was writing as a child, it was basically define writer is I would write fairy tales. A person who takes their imagination and they put it on paper and they tell people in so many words what's going on in their head. As an adult, it's the same. I just extended it into a book form and plays and stuff.
Were you always a storyteller?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was actually my mom and dad took pictures of me at a place that doesn't exist anymore in Los Angeles at 4 years old in a place called Genie Land. And I told, I was performing and telling stories about each of my presents as I got them in front of all my friends and relatives on the stage with the actors on the Genie Land stage. So I've always been a performer, even at four.
Well, I think that's kind of an interesting thing that you mentioned. A lot of people will ask me questions about writing, and they make kind of an assumption about it because they confuse the storytelling aspect of being a writer with the actual physical aspect of writing, which means typing or, you know, writing with a pen. And I try to remember that I'm a storyteller, and I think that's true for anyone who is a writer. Writing is how they do it. But you happen to find a medium that works for you. So that really comes up to the question, which I want you to elaborate, and you've kind of hit on it. Why are you a writer?
Why am I a writer?
Why do you feel the need to tell stories?
It was an inward thing. It's a thing in my psyche. I love to be a storyteller. I love telling stories. And it was just a natural extension to write them down. To give an example, when I was in, I think it was fourth or fifth grade, they told us to write a story based, a little short paragraph based on one sentence. And I ended up writing 6 pages in a Greek myth. It just always has been part of me.
Even when you were sitting around just with your friends, you would do that as well, I'm assuming.
Yeah. I did it. I'm a bad girl. I did it when I was between calls, when I was when I was, I've always done it in wrong times. I did it when I was supposed to be studying for finals in high school and college. I did it when I at break, but I also did it between calls when I was working. I just have always done it.
Are you a good liar?
Liar? No. I'm not, because I blush and my mother caught me in lies from the time I was a baby. I know, I'm a terrible liar.
Well, no, you're terrible at hiding it if you're standing there, but all writers to a certain point are liars. We don't like to refer to it that way, but you create worlds that don't exist. You create characters exist. You basically convincingly lie to people. Boy, it's not like I'm accusing you, but it's reflected back on myself.
You.
Well, I know. One thing I learned about me a long time ago is that I'm actually very good at lying. And I had to make agreements with myself to make sure that if I had pranked anybody with, you know, a playful lie, that I would let them know, no, that was a lie, just before they left my presence. I didn't want someone walking away with a lie. But I think that's a necessary part of storytelling. If you didn't blush or fidget or whatever the tells are that you do when you lie, then you would be an actor because they can lie in front of people.
But the thing is that there's a big difference. When I was acting, it was easy for me to act because I would be not me. I would be pretending to be someone else, and then I'd be a nervous wreck backstage running to the bathroom every 5 minutes because that's one another telltale sign. But when I got on stage, you're someone else and there's a mask. So you're telling lies in a way, but you're telling lies to someone else when you're an actor. So it's a little easier on your psyche because you're going, it's not me, it's them. So it's easier. I guess it's a psychological quirk.
Okay. Well, you're deflecting the guilt a little bit with the mask, and I understand that. I started out as an actor. Apparently, you are an incontinent liar if you have to keep running off to the bathroom.
That's true.
But it all does come back to that same thing. To tell stories, we have to be convincing, and that's why there's a scary power that you have being a storyteller and a convincing storyteller. But on the page. On the page, the world kind of changes because you're talking about the mask on actors. The page is the ultimate mask. You can hide behind those pages. And you do it very well. I've read some of your work, and hopefully you'll have more of it out there so that we can all read it. In fact, I think you finished a play just recently which had a read-through.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that's got to be incredibly exciting. So I want you to tell us a little bit. First of all, talk about the play. I want to know, all right, tell us a little bit about the play itself.
Okay. The play is called A Heavenly Hand, and I wrote it
great title,
originally.
By the way. I love that title.
Thank you.
I didn't mean to interrupt, but that's a great title. Just wanted to throw that in there. It really is.
It went through several, but that was my favorite, so I stuck with it. Basically, I was going through a difficult time. I had been acting and working full-time, and I was a travel agent. So when I was doing that, it was kind of – I had really cool bosses who let me go and audition and stuff like that. And but it got to a point when I reached my late 20s when I was getting up there in the business side where I had to make a choice between acting and work. And work was becoming more dominant. And so I decided I wanted to do both, but I couldn't. And so I ended up doing work, which was being a travel agent. And so I kept saying, please help me, please help me. But nobody would. And so I wrote a play about a girl going through the same crisis. And she had help. She had an angel come and help her. And that's the heavenly and the heavenly hand. But I won't spoil it to tell you how it ended.
Well, don't surprise the ending. I particularly like the dinosaur and the mime, but I won't give those parts away. No, friends, I made that up, of course. That's going to be in my next work. I think it's actually a great idea. Now that's interesting about the spiritual aspect of that particular play. Now, did you feel as if there are times when you have a guiding hand, whether it be a muse or an angel or anything like that? Do you feel there are some times when the decisions are not necessarily within you but seem to be motivated by something you can't explain?
Yes, absolutely. I'm a very spiritual person. I have always been. I've always been a spiritual seeker. I was at that time when I started the play. And I have felt, you know, when you get into a really dangerous situation and you have that gut feeling, don't do it. Well, sometimes, which will make me sound kind of nuts, I hear it in my head, you know, and that is why I think, yeah, there's definitely something beyond us. Because either that or I'm nuts.
Well, yes. I wish I had that little warning voice in some of the choices I've made in my life. And I'm not going to be specific. But you mentioned the voice in the head. And I know you were talking about there are just some times that things happen and a little push happens in your head.
Right.
Does that same voice, do you think that's the same voice, writers will understand this, do you think that's the same voice that's linked to the voices that happen in your head while you're writing?
Yeah, I do. I think that there's very much a, it's going to get esoteric. I think there's very much a spiritual aspect to people who write because they are linked up to something beyond themselves, and they are able to connect to that universe, and they're able to pull bits and pieces that they like. The only thing I can make sense with is make a comparison. When I was acting and I was trying to figure out the voice of my character, I would pluck different aspects of different people into my characterization. It wouldn't be written. It wouldn't be something that someone told me to do. It was just something I naturally did. And I think that's a very big aspect of writing because when you're writing and you want your character to go and to the store, but your character doesn't want to go to the store, he wants to go to the zoo, people that don't write don't get that. They're saying, hey, it's you. Why can't you just make him go to the store? Because he won't, and the story sucks if you don't listen to what the character wants to do. I think it's very much connected. That's at least the way I look at it.
Interesting. Yeah, for those who I think most people have a creative essence. The vast majority, probably everybody does. It's whether they acknowledge it, whether it's been stomped out in their life, whether they treat it like a big playground that they can go and roll around in, which is, I think, what we do. But what Sherry is referring to is that those of us who do this, we hear voices in our head, and it's the same thing that would have us burned at the stake about 150 years ago.
Yes.
But it truly is. The characters come alive. And I've often said for my writing, I don't know if this is true for you, but I come up with the scenario, the plot, the structure, and then my biggest problem is to come up with the first couple of lines of dialogue, and then after that, I take dictation. I'm just listening to what they're doing. And you're absolutely right. If the flow, the character becomes so real and the voice becomes so real that you can't just say, oh, I'm going to, I have to have them at the grocery store, so I'm just going to write them at the grocery store. Because you really have to think of...
The character won't go.
The character won't do that if it doesn't want to go to the grocery store. Yes, it is. It's certifiably insane, but that's...
Mm-hmm.
Somebody once said that the difference between insanity and eccentricity is money. So we get paid for our insanity. That's good.
Well, I was just thinking you brought that up, and I was even Agatha Christie played with that and made fun of that in one of her books. She, on Death in the Cloud, she had a character who was a mystery writer, and she made fun of the fact that the guy was, his character was so strong that he had arguments with the famous character, and it was sort of like a play on her Poirot. I mean, all writers go through that.
Yeah, and you can't really shut it off.
She exaggerated it.
Yeah, but you can't shut it off either. That's
no.
That's the other thing that I know is hard to get across to some people. Have you ever been asked by anybody, how much time do you spend writing each day?
Yeah.
And what is your answer to that?
I can't give an answer to that because I write all different times, and sometimes I'm driving and I'm trying to remember what I thought of until I get to where I can stop and write it down. I'm always dialogue, plots, it's mm-hmm. all the time.
Well, that goes back to what we were talking about previously, that you can't turn it off. And there's a difference between the creative aspect of writing and the actual physical activity of writing. Because mm-hmm. what I've said to people is I say, well, what you're actually asking me is how much time do I spend typing? That's different. Typing mm-hmm. is just the physical way I manifest it, but I can't turn it off. I'm writing every second, every moment. And I find that with good writers, that's what happens, that you can't turn it off, and it's always there, and life is basically your playground for your writing.
True. That's very true. I've always done that. I mean, I don't think that anybody who is a creative person, whatever creative aspect, whether they're, and I've talked to a lot of them doing interviews, one thing doing Chatting with Sherry is that I learn something every single time I interview somebody, and one of the things I learned is whether you're a visual artist, an actor, a writer, you can't turn off your talent. It's always there. You may not use it. You may put it aside, but it's always there. You can't lose it.
Yep. Well, it's an innate part of you. I also believe that, as I kind of referenced earlier, that a lot of people have this stomped out of them. They mm-hmm. are taught by society, by, unfortunately, sometimes by family, by friends, oh, that looks stupid, that's foolish, don't do that. And we start to get self-conscious about our own little child, because the child will always play. And and we refuse to do that. But for us, maybe it's just that we can hide behind the mask, we get to continue being our child.
Thank God.
We can do it. Yes, oh, absolutely. I mean, the great art of the world throughout history, I think, is, you know, I've always said the greatest art has always been done by children. They may be older children, but the children are the ones that are allowed to do it. So
yeah,
working with other creative people, mm-hmm. well, I was thinking that along those lines, creativity can be a very isolated and lonely thing, but when you're allowed to work with other people, and what I'm trying to get to is I wanted to get back to that fact that you did a reading of A Heavenly Hand. It was in San Diego, mm. right, that you did that?
Right.
Yeah. Now, what was that like? Well, give us a background on that. How did that come to be?
Okay. Well, it's a play reading group. It started as a meetup, but now it's a play reading group. It's here in San Diego. And the man who runs it, last year, he decided that it would be fun to have a contest, and people submitted their plays, and he had a few friends who were directors of some theaters that were local within the San Diego County area. And so it worked really well, and the play last year got produced. So he did it again this year, and I submitted, and I was one of three plays chosen. And my play got read.
Wow.
And I heard the words, and it was really cool.
Now, is that the first time you've had one of your plays basically mounted, at least around a table, where people could read through it?
Yes.
Wow. So what was that
like? It was just...
Uh-huh.
it's sort of indescribable. I almost went blank.
Yeah.
It's sort of like a dream. Because, well, first of all, I have my own voices of the characters, but to hear other people's voices of characters is something that you can't really describe to someone if they haven't gone through the experience. But the best I can do is it was like being inside of a dream.
Mm.
That's the way I felt about it. It was exciting and scary and fascinating.
Yeah. Well, I think for once again, writers fully understand this, and it's hopefully the people who are in other creative areas and just everybody else can understand this as well. When you hear those voices in your head, as Sherry's tried to get across, these are fully formed in your mind. That's why they make their own decisions, even though it's all in your head. They still have their own motivations and their own reasons. So by the time you do a table read with actors, those actors are bringing the exact same thing to the table. They have formed their character based on mm-hmm. your work, and their very presence changes it. So sometimes it can be very unnerving, especially if you get the sense that the person just did not, you know, was completely off the mark on what you thought about. Other times it can be incredibly rewarding. You just go into like a seventh heaven type of thing where you float around and you say, oh my gosh, I'm so incredibly brilliant and I did not realize it until this actor let me listen in on it. So
I wouldn't say that, but yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, after a while you will. We always call them little treasures when you're working with really wonderful actors. And they actually bring out levels of your work that you never quite expected. And so you're able to walk around and say, I wrote that. It wouldn't quite be the same if it wasn't for this particular actress doing it. But still, I wrote the basis part of it. So you basically take pride in the fact that you have found a kindred spirit who can interpret it and bring your work to even higher levels. And I've been very fortunate in working with people like that. And I know that probably while you're sitting around that read, you had little flashes of like, oh my gosh, this sounds so much better than it was in my head.
Yeah, that's exactly how I felt. It was like I was, it was weird. It was like I was in the room and yet I wasn't in the room. It's really hard to describe it. I didn't realize it until just now. I was expecting the question, and I knew what I was going to say. But now that I'm actually really thinking about it, it was really like an out-of-body experience. It's the only words I can think of that really describes how I felt for the first time hearing my words like that.
And not just hearing the words, but also I'm sure when you reach certain story points in the reading, there was a reaction from everybody else.
Yeah, the laughs were in the right places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You probably
that
just
was
sat there with
big.
A big. Probably just sat there with a big grin on your face.
Yep. I did. I was like, oh my God, they're laughing like I wanted them to. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they hit them, and the lady who played the angel Alexandra, she did it in such a way that I did not expect. She did it in a, it was almost musical, the way she played her. I told her, I want you in one of my shows.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause she's so good.
That's how a lot of the networking happens in this, especially in the theatrical realm, is it starts out like this. But when you find those kindred spirits creatively, and by the way, it doesn't mean that you're necessarily going to hang out and have lunch all the time. But
no.
On a creative level, you make that connection. You remember those people because they took something that you had created and gave it life and gave it breath. And that's a hard thing to find. It's actually a lot harder than most people think. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of directors, actors, and writers, especially in Los Angeles. Actually finding those connections that work, it's lightning in a bottle, so you remember them.
Yeah. I Well, it's my first time, so.
Well, it's not going to be your last time. And I will tell you this. As somebody who's gone through this several times, well, has made a career out of going through this, it doesn't change. There's no point where you're going to say, I'm bored with this. There's never going to be a moment when you say, I've been here before, and, okay, they're laughing there, that's kind of cool, and they're reading my life. That will never happen. You will have the same silly grin on your face every time.
That's cool. I'm really glad to know that. That is so cool.
That's why we work so hard at this, and sometimes we work for years not being paid at it, because the money's good when it happens, but if anybody was trying to get into being a writer for money, then that truly is the definition of insanity, and they should probably go and be an institutionalized. But you mentioned that earlier, that you had to make that choice. You were
mm-hmm.
working, but you had your art that was calling to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of want you to talk a little bit about that. This is kind of off of our previous discussion of what we might talk about, but I think that's an extremely important thing for people to understand, that call to your art, but at the same time, you've got to have your feet on the ground because you've got to pay your bills. You've got responsibilities.
Right.
How did you handle with that?
It was difficult. I kept my hand in. I did theater. I couldn't do TV and film anymore because I really just couldn't do it. But I had my own apartment. I had my bills. And I was moving up in the ranks that I was doing, I was getting into higher and higher positions. I was becoming management. And I was like to that point where it was either do my dream or take my bills. And it was hard. I never lost the dream, but because I'm an actor, I'm a writer. That's me. It's part of my soul, and I always will be. But you have to make a choice, and sometimes you may look back later and think it's the wrong choice, but at that time, I knew it was my only choice.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't rich. I wasn't independently wealthy. I had to pay my rent.
Yeah. Yep. And those are part of the crisis, is you've got to make those decisions. Great thing about writing is you can do that if you give up your sleep, you can do that, you know, late at night when you're not working. But for writers, as you know, it isn't a matter of turning it on and off. Like I said, it's always on. You know that. But also, mm-hmm. you can't just, like, stop it, go do something, come right back to it. It's all got to
yeah.
be, like, it's got the zone is, you know, the phrase. That is awesome stuff.
I used to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't turn it off. I would do stuff that, don't do it because you could get in trouble, because I did. I would write during, I was a travel agent for many, many years, 20 years. And like I said, I went up the ranks. I became a manager. I worked with other agents. I did all kinds of stuff. But if I got a story idea and it went beyond my break, I would go to the bathroom.
Okay.
I would do anything to finish the story. I mean, I wouldn't be doing anything in there. I'd just be sitting there writing in my notebook.
Ah. Well, so you were the one.
I was the one. I was
people
the
banging
one.
On the door, and you're in there creating your next opus. That's great.
I was a bad
that.
Girl.
I remember that next time I see the occupied sign for about 15 minutes. There's an artist in there.
Well, since I don't do it anymore, I can't get in trouble anymore.
Or you can, just not in that particular area.
Yeah.
Well, we have so many things that I wish we could talk about, but one thing I want to get out before the time starts slipping away, because I think this is really awesome and cool that you're doing this, I want to talk about your Playhouse.
Okay.
I think this is great. This is all about people who give back. This is art helping art. And you have created your own little Playhouse, and I want you to talk about that. I'm going to zip my lip here because I think this is just a great idea. I wish more people did this. So please talk about your Playhouse.
Okay. I've been thinking about it for a long time, I love theater. It's one of my passions. I've loved, my parents put that in me. I was going to plays as a child, and I worked in the theater. I acted. I worked backstage. It's a passion. So I'm doing my radio show, and I'm talking to all these wonderful people, including Steve, and I'm trying to think of a way to give it back. And so my play, I'm doing the play reading, and I get picked and everything, and I'm like, you know, I have a platform. I have something that I can use, that I can help other playwrights, I can help actors, I can give them that piece of audio to say, hey, this is what I've done. And so I decided to create Sherry's Playhouse. And so I put the word out for actors and playwrights. And I've got a great response. I'm mounting four plays. My first play is mine, but I have the other playwrights are still working. That's why first one's mine, because mine's done. I've got a lot of actors I'm going through, but I'm still accepting plays. And so if you're a playwright, please send it to me. I really want it. You can send it by my Facebook page, Twitter, to Blog Talk Radio's website, whatever way you want to do, please send me your plays. Also, if you're an actor, I'm still looking for voices, so I need those too. I'm passionately wanting to help my fellow artists.
These are going to be radio versions of this.
These are radio plays.
Yeah.
Right.
So yeah, it's just sort so people of don't like think you're mounting a full production.
No, I'm not mounting a full production. It's like it's going to be like the old days, like the 40s. Like
right.
They used to do a radio play of movies. So let's say it's Miracle on 34th Street. They've done the movie, and then the stars of the movie would get together at a radio station as a live broadcast and recreate, instead of a two-hour movie, about an hour and 30-minute play version of the movie. And I've listened to all of them, and they're so amazing. And so that's what I want. We haven't had that in a long time, and I think it's a lost art, and I love it.
Anybody who is not, and I do remember the old radio serials, they used to call them. I mean, I was not alive during the 1930s and 40s and so on, but there were still remnants.
Neither was I.
Yeah. Well, there were still remnants of it when I was a kid. There was one particular radio station that every Sunday night they did a radio drama. And you would think that it would be as, you know, boring as listening to golf on radio, but it's not. It was incredibly exciting because since there was no visual to associate, everything had to be created in your mind, in the mind of the listener, which meant that the writing and the vocal talents and the acting and the performance and even the sound effects had to be so carefully crafted. And I would sit there like in the darkness and just listen to these things. And the fact that you are doing this with writers, with actors, with people who have their passion to do this, not necessarily people who are high up on the scale, although I'm sure if, you know, someone, Lucy Lawless, said, hey, I want to do one of Sherry's plays, I think you'd probably not say, oh, please, no, Lucy, step back. I think you'd probably go with that.
No, I'd faint.
True. But I love this because this is something that I firmly believe myself, which is that you don't take your own success for granted. It's all part of you can call it karma, you can call it whatever you want, but it's got to go in and out of your life, and that means that it's got to go to other people as well. And it's never to your own detriment. It always improves everything. So when you mentioned this to me, that you were doing this, I thought, this is fantastic. This is the kind of thing that I want to see more people participate in.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a passion of mine. I just think that I remember hearing my mom and dad talk about when they were children, like 7, 8 years old, and staring at their radio and listening to dramas or to what later became TV shows, like I Love Lucy was a radio show. The Jack Benny Show was a radio show. All these shows that George Burns and Gracie Allen's was a radio show. They were all radio shows, and they stared at this little box with no picture to because they were just trying to get closer to the actors and to the story. And my dad, I forgot the name of it, but it was a science fiction show, like Astounding Stories, but it was on radio. But he used to love that. I mean, it was a great thing, and I wish there was more of it, and that's why I'm trying to do it.
And also for the artists involved, this is a little bit of a roundtable. It's not just networking, but you know, one of the things I've always loved about theater is that theater is real time. Theater isn't pieces of a story, you know, cut together for a film where sometimes actors don't even meet each other and they're in the same film. And rarely, rarely do the writers actually meet the people on the set and the actors and actually work directly with them. This is one of those things where everybody sits around face-to-face, they talk about the project, and then they do it straight through in a linear fashion. And it's just so much more rewarding for the artist. And for anybody else who wants to listen to these things, when Sherry gets hers up and going, look, it's going to be online. If you're sitting there working and doing something, just bring it up on the Internet and listen to it. 9 out of 10 times, I'll bet you'll stop what you're doing and kind of like, okay, I'm going to follow through with this. I'm getting a little interested in this.
Into it,
and that's the whole point. But the one thing you will always hear, and I've always heard in these things, is you can detect the joy that the artists have in doing it. That comes right through the radio.
Yep. Yeah, there's a love and there's a passion, and it's beautiful. It's like the theater. It's just people don't do theater because they want to be famous. People do theater because they have a passion for acting and that response and that relationship with the audience. It's the same with radio. That's why it's sad that there isn't more of the live theater on radio. It's just it's a connection with the audience it's so passionate and beautiful.
Well, how many times have you heard about celebrities, quote unquote, who then, you know, go back and do theater, local theater, or, you know, Broadway is one thing, but going back and doing local theater, and everybody asks, my gosh, is their career on the slide? Is that what they're having to do? And they don't realize, no, they're doing it because, you're right, they have to do it. Yeah, it's a part of them. It's their soul. They love to do this, and they can get in touch with all the things that launch them in this direction in the first place. We were talking about, you were mentioning Kevin Spacey. Yeah, and his love for theater. There are many, many famous actors and writers who want to go back to that. I, you know, for myself, and this is not about me, but for myself, I like to write little 10-minute stage plays. That's kind of like my exercise. I enjoy doing that. It's fun. I've only seen one of them ever mounted, but that wasn't the point. You know, I love doing them.
It's something special. It's magical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you've never been to the theater or listen to a radio play, just listen to one episode. See what you think. They're going to be once a month, so it's not going to hit you all the time. But listen to one. Just see if you get hooked, because I think you will.
Cool. Now, normally, that would be like the cap line for an interview, because that would be like, oh, my gosh, the music should come up now, and that's the last thought I want to leave. Fortunately, we have a few more minutes here. And the other thing that you've been doing for quite a while, and I just want to just touch on this for a second, is exactly what we're doing right now, which is you're chatting with Sherry. You've had a lot of people on your show.
Yeah.
Excluding me, I have to think that there have been times when you've just been kind of talking to somebody and you've made a little bit of a connection with them, and then you've been totally awestruck by something that they said. Now, this is kind of putting you on the spot, but do you remember any of those moments, or any of those people, where they said something and it just illuminated a part of your life that you didn't expect?
Oh, yeah. As I said, I learned something from every interview I've done, to be honest. Whether I made a connection with a person or not, but there have been some times when someone said something really amazing that would set me off to want to find out more about it. Lots of times, but the Hudson, Adrian, Chip, Brooks, my friend Nancy, there's been a lot of people. Yeah, no, you know everybody.
I know. I wish I knew everybody, but no, those are incredible people that you've mentioned, and fortunately, they've been in my life as well.
But yeah, every one of them. And what I love about them is that they all give back. Every one of them. Mm-hmm. Everybody is reaching out to other people, helping them in whatever way they can. That's beautiful. And there's more people like that. I just can't think of everybody's names. A lot of people really want to help other people. People do have a goodness in them. It's not all selfishness, which our society seems to like to heighten and push up and everything. But if doing these interviews, that's one thing I realized. There is a innate goodness in people that all they really want to do is reach out and help people in whatever way they can. That's one of the lessons I learned.
Hmm. And where are you going now? What's the next step? What's your direction? What's your goal? If I could come up with a list of questions that you really can't answer at this moment, just assume that I asked them all. How do you want to see this go off? If you're, 10 years from now, where is Sherry?
Well, for my playhouse, I'd like to have a real theater. That's one of my dreams. I'd like to have a real playhouse where actors can go and work and mount plays and that I can encourage not only actors but writers and theater directors and people of all types. That's one of my dreams. My other dream for my radio show is I would love to have it be big and huge and everybody listen to it, but I don't know. I mean, my writing, I have a lot of projects, but I got other plays I'm working on. I have books I'm working on. I'm working on a lot of different projects, but for the theater, for the Sherry's Playhouse, that's my dream. I want a real theater.
Awesome. That would be awesome and cool. Well, excellent. This has actually been really fun.
Thank you. Me too. I really enjoyed it.
I wasn't sure how it was going to turn out, putting me in the command chair here for a while, but I think I feel the power. I'm going to go and sit down with Julian and interview him now.
Thank you, Captain Steve.
Sure, no problem at all. And I want to thank everybody out there who tuned in. This obviously is something that if you want to pass around to your friends, it will be available here at this particular website. So come back, click on it again, have your friends come back and click on it, and be sure to return for Sherry's future interviews when she will be back in the command chair and doing her magic. And also keep an ear out for the Playhouse. We're looking forward to that. So I will give the official log off, which is thank you for chatting with Sherry, whom I'm not, but this has been fun. Thank you for chatting with me, Sherry, and take care.
Thank you. Thank you, Steve. Bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.